Welcome to Circuit Breakers episode number 9. We're finally getting there. We're finally getting steam. And today I have Yeshwant. Yeshwant Muthuswamy. And he is an expert in audio, AI, and intelligent systems. I want to say I butchered that, but I'm going to let him explain all of the stuff he does. So, Yesh, take it away.
All right. Thanks, Adam. It's great to be on this podcast. It happens to be my first, so I do apologize if I screw up.
No, it's easy. It's easy to be on this. Podcasts are fun. They're supposed to be chill, right? Relax. We're not on camera. That's the best part. So we can dress. I'm dressed in scrubs right now because I'm going climbing right after this. So, yeah.
Great. It is a lot of fun. I am a self-professed audio geek, and I also have experience in AI and intelligent natural language systems, which is what Adam was trying to say there. As well as immersive audio, and I've been in this area for close to 24 years. So yes, I'm old, but it's been fun.
You're not old. I mean, we're all old. It just depends on what you want to say about it.
That's right.
So real quick, I'm gonna fix your mic because you're not coming. Whoa, you're not coming in loud enough. Okay.
How's this?
Hey, hooray! It's funny, the two audio geeks on this are having audio problems, which has been thoroughly entertaining. As I've launched this podcast, as much as I've been doing audio for years and years and years, I've been learning more and more by doing this regularly. It's practice makes perfect. So,
how many audio geeks does it take to get the mic working properly?
Exactly. Exactly. So I will say that... Let's start on the first one, because I know we were talking about a bunch of stuff like the last week. I mean, you've been in my office for the last week too, working on some cool stuff we'll talk about at some point, or we'll release that at some point. But the first thing I want to talk about with you is you just launched a product with the patent office. It's an AI chat bot.
Right. I mean, it's not a product as such, but it was something that I did in my spare time while I was working on a consulting contract as an IP consultant. That's IP as an intellectual property, and it was for a large company that's based here in Plano that will go unnamed for now. But while I was working as an IP consultant reading through over 200 patents in the virtual assistant space, it occurred to me that wouldn't it be cool while I am doing IP analysis on patents in the virtual assistant space, which is basically like an AI bot, wouldn't it be cool if I were to build an AI bot that would go and search for patents from the USPTO for me? So it was kind of the geeky recursive aspect of that CC kind of excited me. So I began to do some more research into that, and I found that the USPTO, that's US Patent and Trademark Office, recently have released a bunch of APIs that would allow people to programmatically access their large patent database dating all the way back to the late 1800s.
That's intense. If you think about it, that's millions and millions of patents.
Exactly.
How are they structuring that data? Well, is it unstructured data or structured data? I mean, that's first of all, that's intensely categorized data.
It's very structured data. But if you have spent any time at all on the USPTO website, you will find that their skills in web design leave a lot to be desired. But having said that, I was quite impressed that they have taken the trouble to release these API. It's on the website called patentsview.org, I believe. I might have gotten a few, but it's called the patents view APIs from the USPTO, and and you can access these APIs from any of the major languages. But they have done a good thing and provided APIs in JavaScript or Node.js, which was really cool, because what that meant is I could then do a conversational bot, an AI bot that accepted either speech or text input, and use these this patents view API as a backend, as a webhook, and go and retrieve patent information from this gigantic USPTO database using just natural language, and could be speech or text. So, for example, I could say things like, "Show me all patents by Apple from 1976 onwards," and I would get this long list of patents.
So you basically got like Thomas Edison in a desk, and you're able to aim chat with him, and that's what you're doing.
Right, and so for example, I actually was able to deploy this bot in Slack, and so now it became part of my Slack interface, and anytime I wanted to find out something about patents, I just invoked this bot from within Slack, and I was able to interact with it and get the patent information, which actually I found helped with my IP analysis work, which I was doing. So I was pretty excited about it, but
that's awesome. That's really cool. Okay, so you kind of hit upon this thing. You built this really cool bot, and then you put it on Slack, which I didn't even think about Slack as a chat tool, because, I mean, even though I use it every day and I'm on probably like 50 Slack things, which I know I don't use enough of every day, but nonetheless, we have that all built together. So what other, I don't even know, my brain's like, okay, let's go in 1,000 different directions, but let's start with Slack alone. So these AI assistants that are in Slack, right? Slack isn't the only one. I mean, or this chatbot's only the only one.
Yeah.
Slack has their built-in AI assistant and things like that. And then there are about 1,000 other ones. And I know we were talking earlier, and they're mostly toys. I mean, they're very purpose-built, very much you are going in this direction.
Right.
And it's not going to answer any question outside of that. Slack has a one that's like a travel tool, but if you tell it, well, I want to do this, it's going to go, I don't understand.
Yes.
So, okay. What's your thought on this? Because I know you have a very strong opinion about the current AI assistants.
Sure. I mean, just to respond to your question on about the Slack bots, I mean, if you go to the Slack apps page and type bots, you will get an innumerable number of bots that people have written and deployed on Slack, and they do all kinds of things. A few of them are kind of useful. Most of them are toys, and they're not very useful at all. They're more of proof of concept. Hey, I can do a bot, kind of a thing. But the key with any kind of AI bots is it's going to be the user interface design. You don't want to try to fool the user into thinking you're a live person. That's point number one.
Why?
Because you're going to be unable to sustain that mask for a very long time. We haven't yet reached a point where you're going to have a bot. I mean, I can't think of any bot that is able to successfully masquerade as a real human being who's answering your questions. And that brings us back to this whole notion of the Turing test. I'm sure there are people who know what the
Turing
test is.
You know, it's to fool a human, or a computer has enough ability to have a human conversation with
right,
you.
Right, exactly.
In the Cliff Notes version.
Right, exactly. And as surprising as it might seem, we still haven't built after over 60 years since Alan Turing devised this test. We still haven't been able to build an AI system that can pass the an AI bot rather, that can pass the Turing test. So one of the principles of user interface design for bots is that be upfront about what you are, that I am a bot, but I'm here to help you. And if you're able to design that aspect into your bot, you will find that users are more likely to cut the bot some slack, and because they kind of inherently understand the limitations of the bot. Having said that, you want to be able to have as real a conversation with the bot. And when I say that, the bot should be smart enough to understand the existing context of the conversation.
Or I've noticed a lot of bots, you know, the bigger thing is they guide you in a different direction, right? So they guide you in a point where, hey, you know, let's do something different. Let's say I'm going to ask it, you know, for example, a slap bot. I'm going to ask it a travel question. Well, I can't answer that, but I can answer one of these other three questions. Right. So let's push the user in a direction. Sure. Say, well, I don't understand that as a bot, right? I, as the bot, don't understand that. But what I do understand is this other set of parameters. Please kind of guide me in that direction, and I will go down that direction. Right. It's just like you don't expect a Roomba robot in physical world to vacuum and then also be able to pick up water. That's the scuba version of the Roomba vacuum, right? There's a mop version and there's a dry stuff version. I totally get that. So now we take it one step further because we're talking about Slack and that's just chat, right? But now, like, we're chatting in person. So we have this whole new crop of toys coming out. Personally, I treat mine like a toy. I do. But I know it's gotten more powerful as I've gotten it too, and it's really fascinating to watch it grow as far as the cloud side of it goes, which is all these like little personal assistants, right? The biggest one in the market, I feel like, and I could be wrong on the market share on this, but the biggest one is the market share owned by Alexa.
Yes.
Right. And as much as I hate to say the term Alexa, because it sets off everybody's Alexas, especially if somebody's listening to this on their speaker with one nearby. But they're getting better, but they're not amazing yet.
No, they're not. They're not. I mean, and I have to, I mean, all said and done, I have to commend Amazon for the fantastic job they've done in marketing that virtual assistant and the smart speakers. I mean, they own a tremendous, they own a majority share of the market right now. I think it's in the high 60s or something. I could be wrong, but they kind of rule the market. Although you have the offerings from Google, and Google is trying to counter that with the Google Max and the Google Home and the Google Mini. And the different line of speakers, in much the same way that Amazon has gotten with the Echo and the Dot and so on and so forth. These are great because what they have done is they have essentially democratized this whole speech recognition and natural language interface, which until a few years ago was under the purview of the schools that were doing research in these areas. So for me, I've been doing AI and speech recognition long before those terms were cool, and so it's great to see speech recognition finally hit prime time, and people beginning to talk about AI and machine learning and natural language as if they just happened last year, but at about the time that Amazon Alexa hit the market. But the fact of the matter is there has been research going on in these areas for over 30 or even 40 years.
No, it's great. I mean, you know, and that's the brilliant part is now that they're coming out with it and democratized, one of the other things is, you know, just like Slack, people are coming out with 1,000 skills for it.
Right.
So one of those things where like with 1,000 skills, what skill's been your favorite and what skill do you wish you could take farther and how do you wish you could take this farther now that the technology is available and it's kind of growing, right? So how do you take it further?
Sure. I mean, not, hard to not to pick on Amazon, but since they own the market share, I guess it's fair game. The thing that concerns me about virtual assistants like Amazon Alexa, when people start using them for skills that control the devices around their home, and they get all excited that I can have Alexa close and open my garage door and turn the sprinklers on and turn the lights on. There is no built-in security features as of yet in these virtual assistants, meaning that they are more than happy to respond to anybody speaking to them. So if your neighbor, if your next door neighbor or somebody with bad intentions happens to know how you invoke a device or a set of devices in your smart home, they could just as easily walk up to your to Alexa or and start using those skills. You do not want your neighbor to be opening opening your front door or turning your sprinklers on. And there's actually been a news report of a next door neighbor using Apple Siri to open a guy's backyard door or garage door. I mean, those kinds of incidents, they highlight the lack of security but when using voice. And by that, I mean
there's the serious ones, right? Like the neighbor getting in the garage door, and there's the funny ones where the parrot ordered, I think, I don't know how many strawberry yogurts, right, and strawberries, yes, and yes, things like that.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, you know, there's security issues, right? So what do we take to steps? I mean, there's like a split, right? Everybody's worried about security, which I totally agree. It's been funny since the last, I think, somewhere in the middle of that, a good chunk of the majority of the episodes, that's one thing that's a recurring topic on this episode, which at some point I will have to get my buddy Jason in here, who works at a lot of the security companies, cybersecurity companies. That's a recurring thing, right? I think Kurt came by and he was great about talking about cybersecurity and where we take it next. And a few others have been talking about it, and there's huge summits. I mean, yes, you're even part of Tech Titans, a very, yep, very, like, involved member. Couldn't find the word for involved, but you're a very involved member of Tech Titans and part of the leadership of Tech Titans. And it's interesting is that's a recurring topic that no one seems to be able to solve, is security. And there's vocal security, right? So, lack of a better thing, Google has actually started implementing voice printing and voice identification, so it can identify my voice versus your voice,
right,
on the assistant. Google or Alexa and Amazon has not announced anything of yet. Although I did see some feature recently saying, would you like to, you know, restrict this to some way, right, in some form or fashion. Right. So those two things are happening. So they're it's happening. But the more we lock it down, the more, again, going back to what we were talking about 5 minutes ago, which is users don't want to deal with security. So that's why everybody sets their password as password so they can remember. right. There's a balance to that, right? So how do you make security useful, but how do you make it usable?
Sure. Going back to this field of virtual assistants, I mean, the very obvious, one obvious way to secure it is to not just have speaker identification, but also have speaker verification. And those two are not the same thing. I think we all have seen ads for the Google Home where it says that it can identify it. It can identify whether it's you who's interacting with it, or if it's your wife or spouse who's interacting with it. That is great. That is a first step. But given that the companies like Amazon and Google are now saying that you can interact with your bank and do banking transactions with your smart speakers, you need to take things to the next level, meaning that you need to have speaker verification, where the system is able to authenticate you and is able to verify that it is indeed you who's who's speaking. That's a much higher bar than just doing speaker ID, just being able to say that it is you or your wife or your son who's interacting with it. You want to be able to say whether it's really Mr. X and it's really Miss Y who's interacting with it, and therefore they either have access to that skill or they do not. And that also ties in with the notion of your personal profile and preferences. What I would like to see is, as these intelligent assistants become more entrenched in our lives, you want to be able to take your personal profile and preferences and have them roam with you, because you don't want to be having to configure a virtual assistant each time you walk into a new location. The virtual assistant, by virtue of it being in the cloud, should be able to identify you by your voice, authenticate you with a high level of accuracy, and then be able to implement all aspects of your profile and preferences without you having to lift a finger. So that's a kind of AI assistant world I think we should be moving towards.
I mean, ultimately, that's what it's supposed to do, right? Is right.
But you're not quite there yet, not by a long shot.
Yeah, you're trying to get to the point where, well, one is AI is supposed to be not as creepy as Hal and say, Dave, I cannot do that for right. you. But it's supposed to be somewhere predictable, like the best assistants. I think they all show them on the movies and whatever, but, you know.
Jarvis, like in Iron Man.
Jarvis actually is the best one, right? Yeah. I think we all want to get to Jarvis, where Jarvis is protective
right.
and still, subservient enough to know better, to like say, okay, Tony, do whatever you want.
Right.
I think that's a great example. But I was more going for a human example. If we always have those great employees that work for us that are able to predict movements and get ahead of whatever the person's doing. And I've seen a bevy of people be able to do that, and they're phenomenal at it. But you're absolutely correct. We're not there yet with Amazon, right? I mean, it's nice I can set up some routines and tell it, hey, let's go. You know, turn on the lights in the morning, turn on my music, connect all those things together and start doing that throughout the house. I think that's a bigger thing that we're working on. And what's really funny is the assistants are still not 100% designed for a multi-user household, which every household is a multi-user household.
Yes.
You're absolutely correct. There's not, I mean, it's great for single people, but it's not great for families or of any sort, like couples or couples and a kid or anything else. Now, what's great is kids now are learning these things and they're just absent-minded. It's great. I have some friends who have like small little young ones and they don't know any better, and so they're just like, Alexa, do this, Alexa, do that, and and it's great to watch. Or you get, again, going back to the, even like between kids and you know, other things that talk in your house. And I think the other funny thing that's been happening is I have this thermostat in the hallway. It's an Ecobee thermostat, which I absolutely love. The Ecobee thermostat, it has built-in Alexa. And, you know, the TV will be on and I'll randomly be sitting there watching something, and all of a sudden I'll hear somebody in my hallway talking. First couple of times, it like startled me. I was like, oh my God, somebody broke in my house. What's going on?
It's your virtual assistant responding.
Yeah, it's my virtual assistant trying to be helpful, but has no clue or context as to what's going on. And right. So it's like, I can't do that. And as soon as it started not making any sense on responses, I realized, oh, it's my dumb thermostat that's not entirely aware of its surroundings.
Yes. I'm sure we all have such stories. I was one of the first adopters of the Echo, the large speaker, and more recently I got the smaller one, the Echo Dot, which came in for free because I got a Dish Network subscription. But it was funny. I was watching a news program, and one of the speakers used the word economy, and because of the way he said it, Echo Dot thought that it was being referenced, and it spoke up right in the middle of the TV program, And we all had a good laugh. And I'm sure everybody has got these kinds of stories.
Oh, yeah. No, the best one as far as TV interaction goes is the 5,000 or something dollhouses.
Right.
It's a famous report, but, you know, child saw that they could order their dollhouse off of Madame A.
And that basically accentuates my point that these are they are fun. They have captured the imagination of the general public, which explains why they are so popular. But at the end of the day, they are fun toys, and that's the part. But these are fun toy applications which people are increasingly using to do quite serious stuff, like having things around their house be actuated or be turned on or off in response to voice input. And it concerns me that there are no adequate backstops and security measures in place that would prevent people with bad intentions from using these skills that could impact how you live and that could impact aspects of your smart home.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're absolutely right, but I think we're getting there. I mean, that's the funny part is, you know, everybody keeps on saying this, and I hear this every day, and one of those things that I hear every day is, yeah, this is great. Let's fix this even better. So yeah, what's next? What are you up to next now that we know where audio is going and what you're working on next and hopefully building better skills and better things like that? What's your big thing for this year? I mean, we're still at the beginning of the year, which is nice. I mean, it's only February yet.
Right.
So what's your big exciting thing for the year?
Sure. I would like to build upon my pattern search bot and have it and add more bells and whistles to it. The problem I'm having right now, I don't seem to find the time to work on this. By the way, this is another plug, an unintentional plug, but this is what I use. So I have to say what I use to build a bot. I use Google's API.ai, which has since recently been renamed to be called Dialogflow. And just about the time I finished the first version of the bot, I came to know that they have released a new version, which is a lot more functional. So I'm eager to transition my bot to version 2 of the Dialogflow API and see how it works.
Are you going to add voice capabilities now that you know it's existing?
And in fact, version 2 has got built-in speech recognition capabilities. I haven't had a chance to dig deep into version 2 of the API, but I want to transition my bot over to the version 2.
You know, the other thing that's really exciting about this version 1, version 2, and all this other stuff, as far as voice things, and to your point, everything being a toy, voice recognition is getting smarter every day.
Yes.
But what Amazon only understands, what, 65%? You had the numbers the other day you were telling
us. Yes. This, once again, goes to my point about a good user interface. I mean, if you have a good responsive user interface like Apple Siri, for example, the independent tests have shown that Apple Siri's speech recognition accuracy is only about 68%. And anybody who has used Siri for an extended period of time will have no argument with that number, because it doesn't get a lot of things right.
Oh no, it's horrible. I barely able to use it on my phone. But yes, it cracks me up because the text messages that come from it are priceless.
Yes, they are. They make for good cocktail conversations. But the point is, Apple makes up for a lot of that, or rather, Siri makes up for a lot of that by the user interaction, by the way it responds to it, by the way it says that it really does not know what to do next. So there is a human element to it which causes people to not take as harsh a view as they would take if there wasn't that feedback and the human interaction. And the same goes with Amazon Alexa as well. The key is you because you are effectively anthropomorphizing these effectively cloud-based software programs by giving them cute names like Alexa and Sis and Siri and so on and so forth, you are expecting some level of human-like interaction back from them. And as long as they are able to provide that, you are okay with their flaws. And that's a key part that needs to be understood with these virtual assistants. They are far from being perfect with their speech recognition. If you pull back the hood, the natural language processing on Amazon Alexa is not all that great. There's a lot of things that are hard-coded, but it works. It has captured the imagination of the people. And now the challenge is for these companies to build on that and make them truly interactive, truly, truly intelligent.
So knowing all this stuff, and I think this is our last question because we're slowly running out of time.
Sure.
But knowing this stuff, what's your favorite voice processing engine to use today?
Favorite? Boy, that's a...
Would you use Nuance? Would you use Google's, Amazon's?
Google has done a great job in their speech recognition, but if you have been following the research news on the large vocabulary speech recognition area, there is actually a nerd race on right now between Microsoft Research and IBM on who can do the best on this really noisy large vocabulary conversational database called Switchboard. And right now, I think at last call, last I read, Microsoft had managed to reduce the speech recognition, the word error rate, which is the percentage of words that you've gotten wrong, down to an incredible 5.5% or even lower. And it has, and tests have shown that human beings can't do better than 5.9. So now we have a speech recognition system, large vocabulary, deep learning-based speech recognition system that can do better than human beings on this extremely noisy conversational speech corpus called Switchboard.
So that's creepy. That's cool. That's very creepy that you're getting error rate.
That are better than what human beings can do. And this race is not over, and my news might already be old, but about 2 months ago, Microsoft forged ahead compared to IBM, but I think IBM might have gotten slightly better since then. So as someone who has worked with this Switchboard corpus in the past, and as someone who has taken part in these large vocabulary speech evaluations, which have been conducted by the Department of Defense, I am paying very close attention to this, as I call this nerd race between these two companies with some excellent people in their speech research departments. So for me, that is a real development to keep an eye on, because it's only a matter of time before those things show up in things like Watson and Microsoft's own virtual assistant Cortana. And frankly, to answer your question, I would say that Cortana is not quite there yet. It hasn't captured the imagination of the general public like Amazon Alexa and Siri have done, but they have some serious speech recognition chops behind them.
So, oh, that's funny, because yeah, you're right. I mean, I've used Cortana a few times and it annoys the hell out of me to launch it up on my Windows tablet that I have, and it's terrible. But again, I have Siri, I have Alexa, and I have a Cortana thing on my tablet that is absolutely garbage, and it drives me nuts, because imagination wise, knowing that Cortana is the embodiment of the AI from Halo and how good she was, and her character is actually a real in-depth character, and she doesn't do any of that stuff. It's frustrating.
Not yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, and hopefully they'll put it in a device that will actually work, because Apple's HomePod is now coming out end of February, so that's exciting, and we'll see what happens with that. So I think that's all the time we've got today. Thank you so much, and thank you to Nerdvana again and again for letting us record here and having some great coffee and things like that.
Absolutely.
If you guys haven't been here yet, it's in Frisco on Main and Tollway, and they have board games and video games and lots of cool stuff going on. So come check this place out, and we will see you in about a week or so if I remember to get stuff posted correctly with the crazy work schedule that I have. So thanks, guys.
Thanks, Adam. It's been fun.